Welcome. I'm Richard Hundhausen. I'm here to talk about the marriage of my two favorite topics, Scrum and Team Foundation Server. So I don't know if any of you came to my pre-conference on Sunday, but it's going to be a digest of that, maybe like a 120-proof digest. A lot of good stuff in this short period of time. But how many of you out there are using Scrum? Awesome. Looks like the majority of you are. The others are just interested, kicking the tires, can't make it work. All of the above? Good. Well, this is a bit of both. We're going to talk a bit about Scrum, talk a bit about how to implement that with the new version of Team Foundation Server. And you've probably been seeing some of these web-based agile planning tools, at least out there in the expo hall or maybe at some of the other sessions. So I'll be giving you some of that. So first of all, I want to just set the pace right here. I am that guy, right? I'm the guy driving around with the Scrum license plates in Idaho. I've always been that kind of a geek, and I have people have run up to me in traffic lights and say, dude, you've got those plates. You don't look big enough to play rugby or fast enough. And I say, it's not rugby. I'm from Idaho. Anybody here from Idaho? Okay, I expected that. This is all I do. I help companies adopt Scrum and or Team Foundation Server. In fact, that's all our company does. So if this is of interest to you, you can give me a call. Off the website, send me an email. My book's, about, I'd say, half done. It should be done by maybe September, maybe on the shelves around that time. And it's basically this talk, except we're going to put in there a lot more dev practices and how to be a professional software developer using the Scrum framework. It's really the first book that tries to fuse together Scrum from a developer's point of view. And by the way, developer means team member. It doesn't mean coder necessarily. Also, the Team Foundation Server, the Agile planning tools, the ALM tools and TFS, branching and merging and all of that stuff, as well as developer practices, so pairing up the developer and the tester, working on test first, taking an Agile approach to architecture. So it's a fusion of three fairly complex topics and putting it into a context that we can understand and maybe actually use. So look for that book. It's Microsoft Press. Wish I had it done, but this winter was a little bit difficult. Didn't get it done in time. So the backlog at a high level, why Scrum? Just a quick, value prop to you. And most of that is going to be in this book, the Software in 30 Days book that just came out from Ken Schwaber and Jeff Sutherland. There's case studies in here. This is more the sales pitch of why Scrum. It's not a technical book. It's not a book that explains the framework in depth. It just explains why. So it's to managers, to stakeholders, to decision makers. On why Scrum? What is all this Scrum stuff, and why is it working? I'll go through the Scrum fundamentals. Not very long. Don't have much time to teach you Scrum today, but I want to make sure you understand the nouns. We may not get into all the verbs per se. Visual Studio Scrum 2.0. That's the process template that enacts Scrum inside TFS. It got a facelift for the 2.0 version. How many of you are playing with the 1.0 version? Awesome. How many of you are playing with the EMC template, Scrum for Team System? Less than last year. Okay. So this is a process template that uses metaphors that are Scrum in nature. Sprint instead of iteration. Impediment instead of issue. And product backlog item instead of user story or requirement. Not spend too much time on that. You'll see that as I'm going through the demos. I'll be using that template. And I thought we'd take a look at the two biggest things. Putting together the product backlog to include grooming. And by grooming, I'm just talking about continually looking at it as a product owner and the development team to understand the stories, have the conversations, emerge the criteria that describes the requirements, pull out the planning poker cards and throw some estimates on there, come back again in a week and re-estimate it, and then finally at some point it's ready to be forecasted and pulled into a sprint to be developed. So that'll be the second part here, which is how do we pull this into a sprint? Really, there's not much to it. You set the iteration path and you set the state. Okay, and now that is in the sprint. It's been forecasted to be working on that sprint. But there's some really slick tools then that kick in. We can use the task board and start taking our task work items and dragging them across the different states. So as someone doing some programming activities might want to be working on that task, they can drag it into the in progress column and it'll set the state. They can update their work remaining. They can update any new notes they have in there. They can create test cases. And then we'll wrap up with the hard discussion, which is, this is great. It's shiny. You've explained it very simply. Everything works great up here on PowerPoint. How do we actually make this work and make sure we get the verbs right, too? There's this thing called flaccid scrum, which honestly sort of kicked me in the butt a couple years ago to start teaching developers on how to be good scrum citizens. And that is, hey, we're doing scrum. You know, we're using the terms, we've got a sprint, we've got a backlog, but we're not getting anything done. You know, we're not able to deliver software in 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks. And that's because you're not taking the opportunity to inspect and adapt and make it the empirical process that it is. So actually it wasn't me, it was Martin Fowler coined the term flaccid scrum. Your scrum's a little weak. And get rid of that weakness by, I don't know, things like defining a definition of done and sticking to it, by having sprint retrospective meetings and taking notes and actually acting on those, by ratcheting up your definition of done, constantly looking at quality and making it better. So that's where we'll end up this discussion. So why Scrum? Because it works. Next. So the Chaos Manifesto comes out every so often. It's by the Standish Group. You can go to their site and look up all the details in here. But I boiled it down to these two pie charts. They've actually seen that the Agile success, and by Agile I mean Scrum, and I'll talk about that in a minute, was skewing the chart so much from the waterfall, so they had to actually pull them apart and do two separate pie charts. And the interesting thing here is the green. You can see just at a glance, Agile projects are 3 times more likely to succeed than waterfall projects. And by waterfall, I'm talking about the big plan up front, the big design up front, the big requirements up front, that approach. In other words, what the guy was really trying to do in the video there. So again, you can dig into this. All the detail is there. Challenge projects, not much different, but the red is a lot smaller, the green is a lot bigger. What I think is more compelling, though, is the case study that's in this book, and it's with the FBI and how they open a case on you. I'm going to open a federal case on you, and that's a CRM for bad guys, if you want to think of it that way. It was built using 70s-era tools way back when. They said we ought to probably update that, so they started off with the virtual case file. They selected a very well-known CMMI level 1000 and ISO 9 million certified whatever. And they came along and said, yeah, 4 million, or 4 years, $170 million, nowhere. So they reset, gave it a cooler name. They called it Sentinel this time. Sentinel. That sounds awesome. Codename Sentinel. Spent more money wasted this time, and didn't ever get it produced. So, and I'm paraphrasing about, you know, 10 or so pages in the book on one slide, so forgive me here. Reset, said, okay, let's reduce the staff from 400 down to 40. Let's put Scrum in place. Let's get some Scrum Masters in here, some people that know what they're doing. So they actually stood up a Scrum Center, a Scrum Studio, if you will, in the basement of the Hoover Building. And 1 year, 30 million code complete. And I believe I just heard that that goes live this month. They were waiting on some proprietary hardware to make this work. But there you go. Stop wasting money. Start doing Scrum. I'll get to the bad news in a second, okay? And I'll frame it in a way you'll understand what I'm talking about very quickly. First of all, Scrum is this 17-page guide. It's a PDF you can download for free. It's at scrum.org. It's maintained by the two gentlemen attributed to have created Scrum in the first place. And it is the home of Scrum. Scrum.org is the home of Scrum. For years, Scrum was whatever the last guy explained it as. This trainer would say this, and you were certified Scrum Master, and over here this person said something different, but you were still a certified Scrum Master. Then you went to some talk from someone who called them different things, but that was still Scrum. And finally they said, enough, we're going to put it into one place, and the Godfathers are going to bless it, and here it is. And they've really simplified it, too. I'll go through a couple things as I'm going through here, but they've, you know, taking the term committed, you know, the team commits to those items in their sprint backlog and changes to forecasted because it sounds a little bit more realistic. You know, things happen. Those 5 things we thought we could do this sprint, we could only do 4 of them because what we do is very difficult and very complex. We couldn't do all 5. So we missed our forecast. It sounds better to salespeople and management people. Commitment sounds like you will do whatever it takes and sleep under your desk until it's done by that time box. So there's a change guide, a change log on the site so you can see what has changed between the October version, the previous version, and maybe the version you looked at last time you actually looked at Scrum, if you care. So the metaphor I like to use is, what is the difference between Agile and Scrum? And Agile, as you may know, is just 4 principles. Go to agilemanifesto.org. here it is, these high-level things. Just like the principles of getting healthy, eat better and exercise. Well, awesome, great guidance. What is eating better? You know, 2 cakes a day instead of 3, 12 beers instead of, you know, 18? It's hard to really put something on that. And exercise, what's exercise? Walking to the fridge instead of having, you know, someone bring it to you? So Scrum is to Agile as P90X, you know, the late night infomercial, the 90-day program. Anybody heard of it or tried it? I went through it, and it works. But it was 2 years ago, so don't judge me. So true or false, P90X enforces eating better and exercise. True. Oh yeah. And guess what? It's a framework that tells you Monday morning, here's the exercise you do, here's what you're having for breakfast, here's your lunch, here's what your snack looks like. By the way, do some stomach exercises somewhere between here and here next day, and it's this whole muscle confusion approach they do. Well, same with Scrum. Scrum is a framework for doing Agile. There's these meetings, and there's these artifacts, and there's these roles and separation of duties, and it's maybe not for everybody. It's kind of hard to do, just like P90X is, but you know, darn, you're starting to see those Agile values flowing in. You are very Agile from day one, and you adopt one of the principles, which is continuous improvement. So that's my metaphor. I'm working on this little analogy here, and bear with me. So this next section here is all in the Scrum Guide. And I want to just spend a couple minutes on it to make sure we understand the Scrum fundamentals. So here are the nouns I talk about. There are 3 roles: product owner, Scrum Master, and development team. Can they all be one person, and you have a one-person team doing Scrum? Sure, but why do you need it? You already know that you're behind, and you don't need to tell anybody else, and you know, you're in charge of the plan and the what and the how all together. So the Scrum team are those 3 roles together. The product owner is the person or the role responsible for maximizing the value in of the product, as well as what the development team delivers. They're not the manager, okay? There are no managers here, per se. The development team at the bottom, those are your developers. We call them team members. They may be doing programming, testing, database design, analysis, technical writing, all those things. One thing Scrum does, and you guys may not like this, but just keep in mind, if you're hearing the conversation have a Scrum in it somewhere, the term developer does not necessarily mean programmer. So the fact that Tech Ed is one part developer, that does mean programmer. So it's very confusing. So one thing I have to do a lot of times is play with the level setting of definitions here. So when I say developer and I'm talking about Scrum, that could mean a tester, if that isn't confusing enough. Okay, the development team size in Scrum is 6 ±3. So anywhere between 3 and 9 technical people that are going to have the cross-functional skills to deliver that item into a piece of working software. That's the size of a Scrum team. If you've got more people than that, it could be that you want to break them down into feature teams. If you've got less people than that, you probably don't need a framework like this. You can just talk. The artifacts over on the right-hand side. The product backlog is the Uber list of everything that you want in the product that you don't currently have. It's your list of wants. Those could be small things like features, typos, color changes. They could be bugs. They could be epic things. Epics are items that are just too big to deliver in one sprint. Gosh, we got to convert our website to that Metro. We got to get our Metro on. Well, there's no way we can do that all in one sprint, especially with a 2-week sprint. So you break that epic down into, you know, make the homepage look Metro. And in that very large story, we're setting up our CSS and some of our styling so that the other stories still to come can go a little faster. The sprint backlog are the PBIs, the product backlog items that the team's going to work on for that sprint, plus the plan to deliver it. And by plan, I'm talking about sticky notes or task work items in TFS that say, task, you know, get on twitter.com and create an account. Task, go and buy an SSL certificate. Task, talk to the database people and have a database created and become DBO of it. Task, code some kind of a, you know, controller, create the model, spin up the entities, those kinds of things. They're tasks that you would have in Outlook or SharePoint. They just go into the sprint backlog, and that, together with all the other tasks, forms the plan for delivering that item. And then the increment is the working software that the team's working on. So it could be that you start with a piece of software at the beginning of the sprint that does X, and then you're going to add to it three more things. So you deliver at the end of the sprint X plus 3 functionality. That is the increment that you're delivering. And then you go into the next sprint with X, reset it, all of that, and you work on the next features. So the increment is just the piece of software you're working on with the features you're adding to it plus all the features that you've ever added to it. And that's working software. You don't want to, at the end of the sprint, say, here's our wireframes, here's our mockups, here's our PowerPoints. You want to actually deliver working software that's done according to your definition of done. And we'll talk about that in a second, too. Within the sprint itself, or within the framework of Scrum, and I put this diagram up to talk about the events, coming in on the left-hand side is the product owner's vision of what the product should do. And that's been digested down into maybe some high-level goals. Maybe those goals have been broken down into smaller pieces of work. The nice thing about Scrum is you don't have to follow the user story approach. I know I've been hearing the term user story a lot here at Tech Ed, and that's great. I happen to really like the user story format. I think it really sings to people. Its simplicity is nice. But if you want to stick with use cases or you want to have a little more formal of a requirement, just not too formal that you're wasting your time, you can put whatever you want into that backlog. That backlog then gets pulled into a sprint, and the product owner says, here are the highest ordered things I want, the most important things. Maybe they're the highest priority. Maybe there's some technical dependencies that put something a little higher because you got to do that first so that you can actually deliver the other things afterwards. So the product owner and the development team need to maybe collaborate on that and put things in an order that makes sense to deliver. That's pulled into the sprint in the form of the sprint backlog. A goal is crafted around those items, and the team forecasts doing that work in the sprint backlog but commits to the goal. This is one of the hardest things that I find people to actually do in Scrum. So for example, if we're going to pull in the first three items from that backlog, and the number one is create a discussion forum for our website, create a Facebook page, and get a Twitter feed on our homepage. Well, that theme is kind of, you know, up our social footprint, get our community presence a little more visible, let our users and our stakeholders give us feedback. Those are themes that you could wrap around that called a sprint goal. Guess what? You may not deliver all three of those things. You may get the community forums done, you may get the Facebook done, but you didn't get the Twitter thing done. Why? Because what we do is very difficult and the other things took longer than we thought because it's very complex. Guess what? We only delivered two of the three items, so we missed our forecast, but did we still reach the goal? Yeah, we did. We delivered a community forum and we delivered a Facebook site, and that helped us increase our community presence or whatever. So it's a bit of a it gives you a bit of a wiggle room as a team that you can miss your forecast but still deliver on your goal. And I'll show you where you can put that into TFS. Daily, so if we're doing two-week sprints, we're talking about the time after sprint planning, before sprint review. These are just daily meetings called a daily scrum. They can happen in the morning or the afternoon. Let the team decide. Just for the developers. It's for the developers to synchronize and develop a plan for the next 24 hours. It's not to find out how horrible we thought we were better at writing stored procedures and, you know, fixing problems or status report. You want to keep the product owner out of there. You want to keep stakeholders out of that meeting. It's just for the technical people who are building the increment to just synchronize on their work. Question? It is included the development team. So yeah, the development team. Pretty much anytime I say developers in the next 53 minutes and 33 seconds, it means the development team members. And they could be those guys too. So yeah, if they're not involved directly in creating that increment, keep them out of that meeting. Because all this meeting is about is creating a plan for the next 24 hours. And there's lots of ways to do this. The most common way is just go around in a circle or have them face, you know, maybe the backlog with the stickies on it or the TFS on a screen or something, and just go through what are we doing the next 24 hours. Today I'm going to go and refactor this and build this and have to go sign up for that. And it lets people hear what other people on the team are doing so that you might go pair up. You know, a lot of times I hear about developers branching. I'm going to work on my own branch so that nobody else messes with me. And I'm like, why don't you just talk in the mornings, and if there is someone that might mess with you, sit with them and get stuff done. That's just a weird thought. I have that sometimes. This whole collaboration over tools. Anyway, things go well through the sprint. You're doing the right thing. you're delivering software, the product owner is looking at it, and it comes up to the sprint review. This is an opportunity not to have the product owner accept the increment. A lot of people think that it's the sprint review where there's this formal, I accept, and then the glasses are clinked together and the thing goes to done and there's this trumpet horn blast. I've been to those, and that's not what the point is. The point is to show the increment working in production with real data for the stakeholders sitting there to have aha moments. A lot of teams don't have the ability to show the CXOs, the people paying for it, what they're doing on a regular basis. Maybe little milestones. Here's something you can look at. We'll send you some screenshots. But Scrum's got that built in. Hey, every 2 weeks, here's a formal meeting. I say formal. It's an informal meeting where if you're interested in what we're doing, come and have a seat. Here's a demo. You can ask questions. It's just like an event like this. And you can say, why can't we have another button right next to that one that when you push it, it lets us export a PDF file? That would be awesome. And guess what? That goes in the backlog. You are inspecting and adapting your product backlog during the sprint review. That's the purpose of the sprint review, is to capture good ideas, have people say, oh, I see how you did this. Maybe we don't need that other feature I asked you for last week. That's a win for Agile right there. Because with the waterfall approach, you would have built both features, and they would have seen they didn't need this one. But this, they saw this one first because it was higher value than the other one, and you didn't have to build that second one. Okay, finishing up. The sprint retrospective, this is where you throw out the stakeholders and the Scrum team, product owner, Scrum master, development team, developers, talk about inspecting and adapting their process, their practices. So this is where you're going to talk about tools and definition of done and unit testing and not pairing with that person or maybe pairing with that person or getting people to have Skype on their desktop to talk to their remote team members or whatever. It's where you're improving the way you do the development of the next increment. Sprint 2 follows Sprint 1. Boom. This can be a weekend, so you can actually go home and take a break and not think about anything. Some teams like to do that. Other teams like to start sprints on Wednesday and finish the sprint on Tuesday so they can start again the next day on the next sprint. And what's nice about that is if the stakeholders have to fly in, they can catch these meetings here and then the next day be part of sprint planning to be asked questions if they need to. Otherwise, they're staying over the weekend. So it's up to you, the Scrum team, to figure out how your sprints start, Monday to Friday, or Wednesdays to Tuesdays, or whatever. Do your sprints change length? No, shaking head violently over here, good. It could be that you do have to change the sprint length, but this should be a decision that you really talk about as a team. The product owner needs to do it for good reason. Sometimes, and it's great, one of the great, I've asked Ken Schwaber these questions, like, Ken, how long should a sprint be? And his answer is very zen. It's short as possible and no shorter, those kinds of answers. So if, Ken, what if we're not able to get work done in a three-week sprint? Answer, go to a two-week sprint. Wow. Okay, because you know what? You can actually, in a two-week sprint, you can actually see the end. 3 weeks and 4 weeks, it's more like, how you had your student projects. You have this is due in a month, so what did you do? You waited a couple days before that was due, then you did it. But a two-week sprint or a one-week sprint, you can see that end date. That's Friday. It's Monday. That's Friday. I got to get going on this. So it puts a little bit of pressure on you, and that's not a bad thing. Oops. Okay, so let's see. The Scrum template, and I'm going to go through this kind of quickly because we're going to just play with it. I don't want to kill you with slides. It's got work item types for all of the different things we're talking about here. PBIs and bugs. It actually does separate out that the bug is a separate work item type, but together they both go in the product backlog. The queries, the reports. Okay, so Team Web Access. Let me kick over here and show you this. You can get to this tool on the hosted TFS preview site, or if you want to have the on-premises Team Foundation Server 2012, it's the same experience. So what I'm showing you here is actually on a VM I'm running. It's the TFS 2012 on-premises. But if you guys are using the TFS preview or plan to go to the full-on product when it launches, same experience. So what we're talking about here is Tailspin 2012. It's a team project I created. And we've got the work hub here where we can go in and we can see our backlog. We can see our task board. We can go and look at a normal work item query like the old Team Web Access in previous versions. You can take a look at files in source. You can compare them. Can't check them in through here, though. Maybe someday. And then there's the build tab up there, which lets you see your builds and even run them. And we're not going to be playing with that in this talk. So the concept of a team, remember in Scrum, a team is 6 ±3. So what you can do with this is just put that Windows group called the Scrum team, put all your different developers in there, your Scrum Master if you want, your product owner, and then just map that one Windows domain group or local group, whatever, into the team here. So it'll actually create a team bucket for you. And I grabbed the nice Microsoft group photo, you know, the would you have invested photo. So that's my team photo. We can give a little team description if we want. It is set up to have multiple sub-teams or feature teams or feature crews, whatever term you like. So if you are working on a large product with 30 developers, you can break that up into different teams and still be doing Scrum with the smaller teams at the bottom level. So let me just do this real quick. If I want to do any kind of admin on this, I can go over here to this little gear, and this brings up the, you know, red background. I feel like a submarine, you know, battle stations. And I can go in here to security, and it's got in here my groups for my Tailspin 2012 project. Here are the standard groups for TFS. You've got your project administrators, which can do everything. Contributors are more of your standard users and check in and check out and update work items. Readers are for your stakeholders. They can just look. They can't touch. And then the build folks are kind of like super contributors that can also manage the builds and create new ones and delete them and all that. You've got this Tailspin 2012 team. This is a new construct here. And these teams basically are a new level of collection or container for these agile planning tools. You've always got a default team. The name of it is the name of the team, project team. You can change that if you want. And the default is their contributors. So you can do this a couple different ways. You can put the people into this group. So you can come over here to members and you could, you know, add my Windows group. I think I've got one out here just simple for demo called the Scrum team. There it is, check the name, and save the changes. And now anybody in that Windows group is now mapped into this Tailspin team, and they'll have the same areas they're working on and the same permissions level. I usually get thrown out of rooms when I tell you this next part right here, and that is one of the principles of a good Scrum team is that you trust each other, okay? You trust each other. Hey, I trust as a product owner that you will build me the best increment possible. And the development, you know, developers trust the product owner that the criteria is accurate and what the users and the stakeholders actually want. So there's this level of trust, and you're all focusing on solving the same problem. So I say, well, to reduce impediments, let's make everybody on the Scrum team project administrator. Usually I get thrown out right about now, and they're like, what? That can delete the project, or they can delete this. And I'm thinking, you know, if that's the least of your worries, you're okay. You know, that's not going to... They can screw the team up and the product and the company up so much better than just hosing your work items. But if it's an education thing, like, oh, we're bringing this new person onto the Scrum team, they've never played with TFS before, maybe you put them in the contributors group, you know, until they get good. My thinking here is I don't want to have the Scrum Master be the only one that can add a new area to the tree of areas or iterations or be able to, you know, create a branch or do a merge or some of these advanced things. We shouldn't have any impediments by the tool. General agreement on that statement? So if the team is ready, and I'll leave it up to you guys to figure out when that magic moment is, consider putting all of your developers into the project admins group so that the tool doesn't block for things like that. And I'll shut up now. People are leaving. This is great. I didn't mean it. So I'm going to go on to, I'm going to show you this thing in a second. For me to actually do this demo, I had to build this little Scrum robot so that it can help me with some of this stuff. But at a high level, create the project, set up the areas, put the groups people's in, put in their photos if you want, so everyone's got a nice photo of what they look like. Configure the definition of done, migrate over any work items, and that could just be typing them in for the first time, reading in an Excel spreadsheet, bringing them over from something else. Okay, so let me set this up. I'm going to rely heavily on my Scrum robot here. So, and I'll give you this code. It's for the 2012 object model. But what it does is helps you quickly set up, actually the only thing you might care about in here, because a lot of this is fictitious areas and product backlog items, but it helps you set up your sprints. It'll put the dates in and figure out the starts and ends all the way down. So you might want it just for that reason. So I'm going to connect to my 2012 project, and it's on this team project collection string. So we're going to go ahead and remove any areas, and then I'm just going to add in these areas right here. So I'll just do this in pieces by uncommenting it and running it. Okay, good. I think everything else is going to behave. So this will just create those areas, and actually it's a tree, so some of them have parent-child relationships. Okay, that's painful. And if I come over here to areas now, I've got a tree of areas. And these areas are just the where this feature request has been requested or where was this bug found. It can mimic your application by functional area, by module, by logical area, whatever. Being that the Tailspin fictitious project I have in my mind is a e-commerce site where you buy model airplanes, customers, products, orders, mobile, et cetera, et cetera. So the next thing I want to do now is set up my iterations, and this might be of interest to you. So let me comment that out. And I always have an initial method here that just schwacks the current iterations. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to add the iterations starting today, going back 14 days, because I want today to be sprint 2, okay, the starting of sprint 2. I'm going to have 4 releases with 6 sprints per release, and each sprint is 2 weeks in length. And the true here says I want my sprint to start renumbering after the release. So how many of you do that? After you release software, you go back to sprint 1. And how many of you would call it sprint 9? It's always about 50-50 on that one. Okay, so for you that want it the first way, you can put a true. For those of you that want the second way, you can put a false. And then I'm going to set my planning iterations. I'm going to say, this is a bit funky, but I sent it a string array that just says I want sprint 1, sprint 2, sprint 3, and sprint 4 to all show up on my planning board, which I'll show you in just a minute. But this is nice because if I didn't have this script, it would take me, I'd still be right-click, add, editing, changing all my start and end times. It does seem a little slow, though. So what I'm getting at is this screen here. These are my iterations, and you might be thinking from, you know, well, what's that? In Team Explorer, we would come over here to our settings, and we would come here to our work item iterations, and we would see a different WINT. Oh, no, it is web-based. This has changed. If you guys have not played with the new 2012, a lot of the little admin screens that you're used to being these modal Windows forms inside Visual Studio take you to the web now. So that's how Microsoft can keep their sanity, building, you know, one common UI to manage the hosted TFS preview as well as the on-premises, is they're just doing it all web-based. So here's the good news. You've got now iterations that can have dates on them, start and end date. So you can say this sprint starts on this date and ends on this date. That's cool because the tools I'm going to show you in a minute will actually know what the current sprint is. Those queries won't, though. If any of you have fought with the current sprint queries and had to reset them each time manually, yeah, that story doesn't get any better. But I do have a good trick from a fellow Scrum developer that I can share with you. So in addition to setting the date, so you know, you can roll this up and you can see the release is the 29th of May through the 20th of August. And then within here, here's where each two-week sprint starts and ends. And this just helps you when it comes to maybe forecasting your work to see, well, two-week sprints, you know, we've got 200 story points, 20 points on average is our velocity, 10 sprints it's going to take. So we'll be able to hit this, you know, sometime in September, for example. The checkboxes here tell the tool I want to see those in the screen I'm going to show you here in a few minutes. The last thing I want to do here is pop over to SharePoint. I have to get SharePoint into my talk somehow. Because, as I always tell people, SharePoint is the answer and the question is irrelevant. Now, this project portal here is still a great dashboard for your charts to show your progress. The product backlog is on here. So, you know, people that are interested, stakeholders, can come in here and have a look at your product backlog and some of the charts. I like it because it's got this wiki. And there's just a lot of things that a development team wants to track, such as this thing called the definition of done. So if I add a new page here and just call this the DOD, no, not that DOD, But I have always wanted to know what the DOD's DOD is. Patrick, you'll have to help me with that later. Okay. What does this want to know? Autocomplete? I don't know. Sure. So our team's definition of done, because we're just getting started, is everything is coded. How about that? All tests pass. I made that nice and generic. Everything is checked in and labeled. And I like this. I always like having this at the end of my definition of done. And all of the product owner criteria, however you spell criteria, and I should actually spell this out, acceptance criteria, is met. Because before the development team is done with a piece of work, it's got to meet their internal sort of checklist that they as technical people follow, and also what the product owner expects this thing to do to be done. So those two lists have to be done together, so I always kind of link them together by putting that last thing in there. Now this should start simple and achievable, but as the team gets better at what they do, add things in here. Add in code coverage, ratchet up code coverage, put in reviews of code. If you really want to get busy, all code written in pairs. All code written tests first. All code written test driven or behavioral driven. You can get to that level and then realize, well, we've only got 3 days left in the sprint. Should we take on a new piece of work or not? And then someone taps you on the shoulder and says, have you seen our definition of done? I'm not sure we can do that level of quality in 3 days, even though it's a hello world application. So you've got to take that into account when you're forecasting work for a sprint. What does the team consider quality? And that's this list. You never want to cut this list to just get something done in a hurried amount of time. All right, so let me save this, and we'll come back. Questions on any of that so far? Created a project, secured it, areas iterations with the Scrum robot. Email me later if you want that, or I might blog post it. So here's just a chart that just kind of maps. It's an eye chart. Cover your left eye and read the Visual Studio side. Cover your right eye and read the Scrum side. But if you're coming into this room with knowing Scrum but not really Visual Studio, then this will help you wire that up in your head. If you're coming into the room knowing Visual Studio, and when I say Visual Studio, Team Foundation Server, and you're like, I'm kind of new to Scrum, so I know what team projects are. And you're like, oh, team projects map to the product. Gotcha, okay. Now, I should put an asterisk at the bottom that says some of these things depend. I mean, I'm not going to ever tell you this is how you have to do it or you're not good citizens. So if you as a team decide to break your product up into multiple team projects, fine. But this is my guidance when people are just getting started. Keep it simple. Talk to me about your specific problems, and we can come up with some other alternatives. One of them is, Richard, what do we do when there's just 6 developers in a company and they've got lots of products? Right? Sound familiar? So, on Monday and Tuesday, we work on Joe Bob's project, and on Tuesday and Wednesday, we work on this project. And I'm thinking, well, can that be planned? And probably it can. If you can get one sort of Uber product owner that can say, I'll just pick these and put them in the order I think that they can be delivered, then you're actually working off of a common backlog from multiple products, but you can set that up in its own team project to just have that list. So team project 1 is just the backlog, and then team project 2 through N are just source control team projects. Aha moment. Yeah, see? And name the top one with an exclamation point so it's always at the top, because you can't rename them. All right, so you can read this. It's on the slides if you want to download and look through it later. But let's get into the product backlog. You'll be seeing this in just a second, but essentially the product backlog is an emerging, living, breathing thing. It's some myths about it. Myth number 1, the product owner is not the person doing the typing. Okay? Anybody can type up the item and put it in there. TFS, obviously there's some permission things to talk about. The product owner is just responsible for what's in there, that it's clearly understood, that it describes the value, that it's transparent to people that's in there, but they don't have to be the typist, okay? I get a lot of questions like, what do our business analysts do in Scrum? There's not really a spot for them. Well, perhaps they could be useful outside of the sprint, writing these things up and helping people understand what all the criteria are, or they could be useful inside the sprint, helping the development team create tests and come up with success and what that looks like. But this will emerge, in my opinion, just have a title, sticky note with a title. Sure would like this report to be exportable as PDF. That's good enough to put in the backlog. Probably won't go too far until someone adds some description to it, including maybe a value proposition, like, other than just being kind of cool, who's going to use that and why would they care? You know, someone in there needs to make a decision that that's going to be developed at some point. So I like having the description there written as a user story. As a user, I want some feature capability so that some benefit can occur. So what would be the user story for having a report exportable to PDF? Anybody want to write that user story in their head real quick and tell me?
User wants a PDF.
So that?
Wants something to look at.
They can look at paper. So that we protect the trees. Come on. Save the trees. At some point, there should be a value given to that item. And I put a number in here that looks like it goes into the double digits. That value scale is owned by the product owner. It can be whatever you want. I sometimes see very simple scales like this. In fact, I will put another one. I'll put another little wiki guy here. Can you see this? Yeah. So here is our business value scale. It's 1 point equals we have raving fans. Okay, they were already fans. Now they're just raving fans. So that has business value, but maybe not as much as I don't know, getting exposure to our product and business. And that's maybe not as much as we can make money later. Not as good as make money now. And maybe not as good as we promised this to an important person. Okay? Someone named Buffett wanted this PDF thing, and you know, we should probably get that built. This is not a list you can take and use, but you see where I'm going with this, right? Lower numbers have less value than higher numbers, and you as product owners or organizations can substitute in your own thing here. Maybe you're just raising awareness, maybe you're saving lives, maybe you're reducing the number of surprises, whatever it is that's in your business domain. So the backlog page in Web Access. I should just go, should stay in over here. So I go to this on the home page here. I can go view the backlog here, or I can go to work and go to backlog. But this is my product backlog, and it's currently empty. I'm seeing over here my four sprints that I told it I wanted to see, and it knows, given today's date on my computer, one of those sprints is in the past, one of them is current, and two of them are in the future. Now, I've actually got a whole bunch more that are in the future, but I didn't check the little boxes to have them show on here. So that's a nice feature they added in a little bit later in the product cycle on this tool, is I don't want to see 100 sprints there. I just want to see the ones that I really care about. A couple behind me, current, maybe a couple ahead of me. Okay? And what you can do here is, when you're in your sprint review meeting and you're showing the increment and the stakeholders are like, oh, that'd be awesome if, you know, we could get some Metro. Okay, we need to get some Metro. I don't know what that means, but we'll figure that out later. Oh, that would be awesome if we could support the XPS format. Wait, PDF format. Capitals format. Oh, and there's a bug that when you use a password with the same name as a Star Trek character, blue screen or something like that. Blue screen. First of all, what do you notice about the three? Can you tell me right away which one's my bug? Nope. It's one of my beefs with the tool, is you can't really tell what the bug is. So the guidance I'm giving in the book, until they come up with like a little, you know, a little cricket or something that'll sit next to it, is just prefix it with the word bug. And actually the blue screen is more appropriate to put down here, maybe in the steps to reproduce. Blah, 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 blue screen. This is why TFS has a separate work item type for bugs. Scrum doesn't care. Scrum would call both of these things PBIs. There's something that needs to be done in the product. Yeah, one is a happy thing and one is a sad thing. But TFS likes to differentiate because the bugs track different things. Okay? So you can just put these things in quickly by title. You can customize this panel and add new questions to it. I'll actually show you guys that here in a minute. Or you can, you know, if you want to bring up and add the whole work item form at a time, come over here, I want to do a new PBI, and then you get the whole form to work on descriptions, and you can link up attachments and whatnot here. But of course, I have no time for that, so we're going to run the robot. And I've got a little method here that just destroys the existing work items. Goodbye. Goodbye, Star Trek. And then I have it bring in a little backlog XML file that's just part of my solution, and it's just a little XML document that goes through product backlog items, and just is a bunch of fictitious stuff here that I'm using for my book. And I'm a neat freak, so I like to use the C data for my acceptance criteria so I can embed styles in here and make it look nice. Because with the new version of TFS, you can put in rich content for your criteria and your descriptions and your repro steps and all of that. So sure, I'll take advantage of that. And let me run this. This one actually might take just a second. Questions so far? Sir? Yes. You won't. So the question is, I don't see that on TFS Preview. And that's because there's no SharePoint in the sky option for TFS Preview to use. So that's one thing having this on-premises will let me link my team projects to my other on-premises SharePoint. So yeah, that's a good catch. I don't know if you can link it to an on-premises SharePoint. I don't know if you can do that, so I'll have to ask. Yes. So the question is, any place you can track some capacity hiccups? And I'll show you that in a minute. Okay, so the script ran. So if I come back over to here, cancel my ad, go back to the backlog, I should have some stuff in here now we can point at and talk about. So there we go. Customer login, server names, Discover cards. And then I put in this thing here, which just to show you what an epic looks like. So at some point, someone said, we need to make the UX better for mobile devices. Well, that's true, but it's kind of a big thing to do in one sprint. So we broke it down. Well, first we'll do the home page, and then product browsing, and then we'll finish up with all the ordering stuff. Have any of you ever gone through this exercise of breaking big things down into more bite-sized chunks? Wow, that is not easy. You know, it's one part science and one part magic and one part luck and a lot of collaboration and negotiation, it seems like. The good news is once you've done all that hard work, you can easily put it in here and visualize how it breaks down. Let me quickly customize this. I've got a script ready to go, and I'll be letting you have this as well. There's a command line tool in TFS, and you can only do this on the on-premises TFS. You can export this agile configuration. So you run this wit admin, and you run it with this export agile process config file, and then that gives you this document. And for time's sake, I have already opened this up and made some changes to it. So I told it in that little quick add panel, I want to show another field. In addition to just the title, give me a business value field so I can put the business value in right as I'm entering it quickly. And also down below, I don't know about you, but I kind of want to have an area path here and maybe also my business value so I can, as I'm dragging and dropping and ordering these things, you know, see that. So I've added in an area path, and it's 210 pixels, and I've added in my business value. It's 100 pixels. So then what I do here is I just run this other script, and let me just make sure I'm pointing at the right team project here. And this just does the reverse. It does the WIT admin import agile process. I give it my Scrum collection. I tell it the 2012 project, and then I give it that XML file there. And then if I go ahead and run this, it's fairly instant. Come back over here, and I just hit F5. And it's nice they gave us this customization. The bad news is you can't just come up here and like right-click and choose the columns like you can in the rich UI. You've got to do it through that XML document. And it's sticky per project. Okay? It might be. I haven't seen that yet. Like the process editor? It's there. I don't know if you can do that part yet, though. But yeah. You and your shortcuts. Supposed to be impressed with I did it from the command line. So now I've got area path here and business value. So I can now start to groom this backlog and just drag these things up, you know, and put these things where I want them. So discover cards is very high. Wait, who am I kidding? Let's put that down here a bit. And, you know, careers page, whatever, customer login. So this is how you can order the backlog, is dragging and dropping. And for those of you who have ever used TFS in the past and wanted to do that and didn't own Urban Turtle, that's painful. How many of you have used Urban Turtle? Okay, so you guys are already loving this. You've already got this. For the rest of us that had to reorder things by writing strange, crazy Excel macros or whatever, this is an order of magnitude easier. Okay, I'll come back to this. I want to make sure I wrap up here and don't miss anything. Talked about the PBI work item. I created this, the initial items, setting up the backlog. So grooming is, I mentioned this earlier, I think it's one of the most important things that the Scrum team can do to be effective, and that is meet regularly, and the team can decide when and where that is, up to 10% of the length of the sprint. So my easy formula, for example, is Tuesday afternoons. We meet Tuesday afternoons to groom the backlog, unless you're starting your sprints on Tuesdays or Wednesdays. And we meet Friday mornings. So a four-hour chunk is, 4 hours is 10% of a 40-hour week. So that's my rule of thumb. Now, honest, if you're gone to tech ed for four of those days and you come back, don't groom the backlog, right? It's capacity, really, not sprint length. But all you're doing is you're sitting around talking about the upcoming PBIs, learning more about them, breaking out these things. I've got these up here afterwards. You can come up and grab a set. Planning poker cards, you know, you're breaking these out, you're doing your estimation games, you're coming up with what that effort looks like. It's important to know the effort or have an estimate of how long it's going to take for the development team to do these things so the product owner can know either A, what's going to be in that product when you release it on a given date, if you're releasing by date, or B, when that set of features will be able to be released if you're releasing by feature. Who here releases by feature? It's done when it's done, and it'll have everything in there you want, and it might be a month plus what we talked about. So that should be everybody, because even fixed date things slip, but that wasn't my goal. So without having a groomed backlog and having these estimates, it's just a shot in the dark. I don't know if any of you went to the Agile estimation talk yesterday with Forte and Joel, but they nailed it, the cone of uncertainty. You need to go a few sprints into the process, into that development, get to know each other as a team, get to know the domain, get to know the tools, get to know Scrum, and then you can actually get those estimates a lot more accurate. One thing I wish that they would have said during that talk was grooming the backlog, because that's where you're constantly revisiting and making sure that these new, better estimates go in here for that ability to kind of predict. Okay? So I'll show you where you can do that here. Grooming the backlog, I think, in fact, I just had the robot give me some values. But we might pull this up and say, okay, customer login, what are we talking about here? Well, we're talking about the returning customer should be able to log in. Login can be created during checkout. Passwords should be stored encrypted. And salt that hash. Just saying. And web pages should be returned in less than 3 seconds. That was a cross-cutting concern that we want all web pages to be like that. So we're sitting in Paula's office. She's the product owner. The whole development team is here for this, right? We don't skimp on anybody. If we need a database person for this piece, if we need some testers, we will need testers. We need some UX people, whatever. They're all here. They've all got their cards. They're all asking good questions. There might need to be some subject matter experts in the room. We might need to bring somebody in from VeriSign to talk about hashing and salting and whatnot. That's an extreme example, but you get what I'm saying. You want to be able to have people available that know the domain, what you're talking about. And then you pull out your cards and you're having a discussion and you're having another discussion, and maybe you get to consensus that it's a lot more than one. We think this is more of an 8-point problem. And that 8 does not mean days or hours or dollars. It just means that this is 8 times harder than something that's a 1, or roughly twice as hard as something that's a 4. It's that whole relative, comparative estimation. Did any of you go to that Agile estimation talk yesterday? All right, so these are the story points. Are they effort, or are they size, or are they complexity? My answer is sure. Whatever you want them to be, just make sure that they compare with the next thing in the same unit of measure that you've got going on in your brain there. And I'm way too not the science geek to figure out all the math on what I just said there and how wrong it is. So, long story short, you know, you have a look at this, you revise it, it just became an 8. That will affect your forecasting. One of my buddies who's a Scrum developer says they will never consider pulling in a PBI until they've looked at it 3 distinct times. So it doesn't mean necessarily 3 weeks, you know, groom, groom, groom. You can have casual conversations, you can talk about it, you know, but have a look at it 3 times before you pull the trigger and start to build it. Do you guys agree with that? Does that seem a little much? Look at a story 3 times as a team, maybe estimating it each time before you're at consensus, perhaps, to go and build it. Awesome. I love you guys. I'll tell Simon that they were so enthusiastic. Like, I've been saying that for years. Okay, and Ken Schwaber says, and if you've ever met Ken Schwaber, he kind of looks like that. He always wears the All Blacks jersey. But I stretched it down a bit and made a little bit more of a Jedi robe out of it, you know, and put the little white belt on there. The product owner is the hardest role to fill and the most important role in Scrum. And that's because they need to be available. They need to know the product. They need to know the domain. They need to know Scrum so that they know that they're in charge of the what and the development team is in charge of the how. They need to, maybe have some authority so that they can do things like, oh, you're right, there's some complexity that came up on building that feature. Well, I'm telling you, put that on the shelf and we'll do this feature instead. So have some spending authority, if you will, that they can make those on-the-fly decisions. Now, all of these attributes, you're never going to find one person with them. Devoid of politics is another good attribute. That never happens. So they usually come from some place inside that had some kind of an opinion on how the product should go. So I've heard some really good advice lately. One is, if you're having a hard time finding a good product owner, grab someone who was a tester, right? No politics, really knows the product, probably the domain too. You just became the product owner. Or do what this company in Boise did and put an ad in Craigslist, basically. Wanted product owner, come and, you know, drive the vision of our flagship product. I thought that was the craziest thing, but then I started thinking about it, and I talked to the guy, and it kind of made sense because there was these sort of 9, you know, like the Fellowship of the Ring, they all got their little agendas. We want the product to do this, and my customer wants to do that. And you just need one person in here to be the firewall. Look, talk to me, I order it, that's it. Team builds what I say. And that's what sometimes you have to do, just put up this, you know, this inflexible thing right in the middle and say, you know, go away, I'll make the decision on the order. Explain it to me, and then it happens. So setting up a new sprint, there's the bit.ly. So for those of you in here playing with the Scrum template and want to see the little trick for today on how to handle that current sprint query. And what I'm talking about here is when you're over here on one of the queries, so let me go back up here to home, work items, there's a set of queries in here that are called current sprint. You're like, oh, cool, these take advantage of the fact that there's dates on these sprints now, right? Not so much. If I edit one of these bad boys, it's actually hard-coded in here to be sprint 1 or sprint 1 down here. So part of your setting up a new sprint is to go and manually change these. And there's a trick out there that fellow Scrum developer Mark Michaelis came up with. It's really elegant how he did it. And I'll let you guys go and discover that. But what we need to do now is come back here to our backlog and say, well, gosh, how many of these do we think we can do? Well, let's turn the forecasting tool on and kind of give us some guidance. So our velocity is maybe 18. So the tool thinks that in sprint 2 here, we can probably achieve these top 4 simply because the effort totaled up is less than our velocity. Now, don't just blindly go, we do what you say, team system. Oh, wait. Team Foundation Server, use that as one of the inputs to your discussion. Some teams will say, you know, our velocity's been 18 and these total up to 21, but the fridge is full of energy drinks. We just got back from Tech Ed. Everyone's, you know, in good shape. I say we go for it. So sometimes teams will just go with what feels comfortable just using that velocity input as one of the variables. So I'm going to say, let's go for it. We're going to take these guys, and you just drag them over to sprint. And what that does is it sets the iteration path over here, if you can see that. So now these are sprint two, sprint two, sprint two, sprint two. And if I go into sprint two now, you'll see that it's filtered down the backlog to just be those items in the sprint two. I should probably set these states to approved. And since I'm lazy, I'm going to go use the bulk edit capability for that. I asked the guys early on, hey, when I drag that to sprint two, would you set it from approved to committed for me? And they said, no, we don't want to do that. So I'll run my current sprint query, the sprint backlog. I think I've already tweaked this one, so it's already looking at sprint two. And then what I'll do is I'll just do the shift click, pull this down, and do the edit. So this is the bulk edit that used to be in Team Web Access. It's just in this tool now. And we're going to set the states to all these to committed. Now, that should probably read forecasted because the rules of Scrum are you forecasted this work or at least planned it for the sprint. But they're still using kind of the old Scrum terminology of committed. That's something that we're talking to them about. But it's good enough. You get the idea. This sets the state now. We save our changes. We go back here to the backlog, and we can see that in sprint two here, we've got this work now that's all been committed. Now, the last thing I want to do here is actually get some task work items in here. So I'm going to start the bot creating me some tasks, and you'll probably laugh on these, but I've just got a list of tasks here, design the UX, create the view, code the controller, create the entities. And this is just some standard stuff that probably won't apply to everything, but it's test data. It's going to be better than anything I come up with on the fly. So let's just run this little bot here to create me a sprint backlog and assign these tasks to the sprint. And we'll run that. And I'll bounce back here while it's running. Because we've got about 10 minutes left. So going into that sprint planning meeting, you want to take in there with you a couple things as inputs. One is the product backlog that's been groomed, because you've been meeting every Tuesday afternoon in Paula's office, and you've got a really good understanding of the items at the tip of that iceberg, if you will. You know what's coming up. In fact, when you get to be a high-performance Scrum team, you don't even really have to spend much time at the sprint planning meeting talking about what you're going to do. You know from grooming, we've been talking about this three times, boom, 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 those four things. Okay, let's go right to the how. Let's start talking right about the plan and start creating the tasks and taking this thing apart. Yeah, so good question. So as far as the Scrum calls it a plan, but in TFS they're task work items. That's all on the development team. In fact, the development team owns the sprint backlog entirely. They will collaborate with the product owner to decide what the high-level PBIs are that go in there, but the tasks are totally on them. Product owner can't sneak in anything. Everybody else stays out. That's totally for the team to build and to own. So it shows at this high level these, the PBIs and the bugs that you're fixing and then the linked tasks. And the task work item is just a title, an iteration, which is the same as the thing it's associated with, and then the number of hours remaining. And I made this one 24, so this is quite a large task. But, at the sprint planning meeting, we were running out of time. It's kind of like, it's getting to be time here. So we said, we got to do some kind of an installer, and I don't know which one we're going to use or what. We're going to use Wix or have to get third party. So 24 hours to go do this thing. And then guess what? A couple days into the sprint, you might do your research on installers and realize that we can just use the one we've always used, and that 24 goes down to a 2. But it's good to identify even at a high level, big, giant, not-so-granular tasks so that you have an idea of the work ahead of you. Also, one thing that still bugs me about the template, and I'm not ashamed to say it, is there's this activity drop-down here, and it's got things like testing activity, development activity. Here's a hint. In Scrum, they're all development activities, so you don't even need to use that field. And if you do, then you might start making people conditioned to just look for the testing activities. Even people that put sticky notes on whiteboards for what has to be done for this sprint, people will just start looking for the green ones because those are the database ones. And that's not a good, healthy behavior to have. You should look for what needs to be done next, not just for what you like to do or are good at. So back to the P90X. You may be really good at push-ups, but there's some pull-ups you got to do too. Just not me.
So how to counteract that? The effort versus the hours?
Okay, you're right. Here now we're talking about effort. Let me go back to that screen. At tasks, you're now talking about hours. But the PBIs that the tasks link up to, you're just talking about these abstract things called story points. And don't ever try to resolve it. You know, some people will say, why was this 5 70 hours, but then this 5 was 80 hours? Here's the answer. What we do is difficult. Okay, there's your answer. In fact, for people that really want answers like that, you guys are free to use this. It's just called the psychic. Dave showed something like that before, but if you're just looking to predict a number of hours, just give him a number. if they prefer it in days, you know, you can give them some days. If you don't have time to play poker, you can just, you know, go with the Fibonacci here. And if you can't come up with a sprint goal, you know, this will give you one too. This is, you know, kind of like the Elorum Ipsum, but of Scrum. By the way, there's a bacon Ipsum out there that just does meat, if you ever care. All right, we're wrapping up here. We've got about 6 minutes left. So let me create the sprint backlog and actually do some things here with the task board. And then we'll talk about a couple behaviors and we'll be done. So I've got these items now. If I hit F5, hopefully the robot has pumped these in here by now. There we go. So a little bit shorter screen here than I'm used to, but we've got all this, and they're all the same standard task for these. But this shows you how that breaks down to the plan or the work. It's just that this backlog is not a very good place to see it. So at this point, you want to go over to the board. And this is your task board. Urban Turtles had one. There's a number of them out there on the market. But it's just a visual task board with the three states for a task work item, to do, in progress, and done. And you can flip this thing around. Here we're looking at it so that the PBIs are down the left-hand side. And then you expand it to the tasks here in the different states. Or if we had the different team members, we could see then, you know, which you know, Dieter and Dave and Wade and all your different people on your team, what tasks do they have assigned to them? So a couple different views here. Someone asked me about capacity. I'm going to have to show that afterwards offline. But the idea here is, as you're going through the sprint, you know, you're dragging these things out into in progress, so you can see that, you know, the number of to do goes down, the number of in progress goes up. And part of a good behavior on a Scrum team is to update your estimated work remaining hours each day. Okay, so and you don't have to own everything either. I should point that out too. It's okay for things to sit here without owners. In fact, that's probably a better practice, because then a good high performance Scrum team can come up and say, well, what needs to be done next? Well, I'll do this. When you can pull it over, and then you can, you know, assign it to yourself. And then as you work on it, you might say, oh, I've done some work on that. And click here and just drag it down and set it to 2. And that'll affect your sprint burn down, which is up here. It doesn't really show the thumbnail here, but it will show you what the initial bounce is for this. So we're at 250 hours, and there's where the sprint's going to be done, because we know the stop date. So that's our ideal trend line to get to 0 by that date. And as we go through the different days, you'll see the little mountain ridges, and hopefully they're generally going down at that same angle, but sometimes they don't. And then you can drag these things all the way over to done, and then it'll take the number back to 0. And if you do it, you know, errantly, you can drag it back, and it tells you error, because you need to just come in here and give it an hour. Something that's not done needs to have an hours on the task. This is very handy. You can have this up during the daily Scrum. I know some teams like to do that, as long as it doesn't detract from the purpose of the Scrum, which is to come up with the plan for the next 24 hours. This is a good way to see what work is left to be done and see who's we're going to work on what, who's going to pair up, and come up with the plan for the next day. Questions about this tool? All right, then let's wrap up here with a couple final things. So do the right thing during the sprint. Attend the daily scrums. Improve, listen, work together, be a team member. Lots of those good things there. And then to complete the sprint, you're going to deliver this increment, show it in a sprint review. You're not just doing a demo and, you know, looking for applause. You're actually looking for feedback that you can put in the backlog, and then you do it all again next sprint. Source control activities as needed, you know, label the code, branch the code, put a CD in the vault, whatever kinds of ceremony there that you do, you're going to wind that down as well. Not all sprints are released, by the way. They should all be treated as though they will be released. That's something that I'm really strong about is, as you're finishing those PBIs in Sprint 2, you know we're not going to release until Sprint 5, but you should treat this as it's done, I never have to go back to it. It's in there, there's a, you know, maybe there's an installer for just that feature, however you want to put it in your mind. But you're done with it and it's ready to go out the door. So that you don't have to come back in Sprint 4 and like go tune it up somehow. So I talked about flaccid Scrum. Definition of done is probably the strongest way to avoid being flaccid. And that is, as a development team, you identify your definition of done, you know, coded, tested, labeled, peer-reviewed, test coverage, all of those things, and then you stick to it. So, for example, if our definition of done said, we shall have no code analysis warnings or errors, and then as you're walking down the hall with your laptop to show, you know, the increment at the demo, you have this. Oops, someone forgot to give it a strong name. There's a CA2210 code analysis warning. Now, what do? Do you stop, turn around, and go back and call off the sprint review because there's nothing to show? Or do you say, this is a little thing, we'll just do this next sprint? Or do you say, right-click, suppress, which you can do in Visual Studio? So these are kind of, this is what I'm trying to get you to just think about behaviors here. It might be a snowball. It might be that really, you know, down the road becomes a big issue. Or this. This dialogue that you built for your customer, your company, is in the product. It's shipped. It's in the production code. People are using it. And then someone noticed that the buttons down here are backwards. Apply, OK, cancel. Doesn't follow the Windows guidelines, logo compliance, and all that stuff. 2 seconds to fix, but it's done, it's been accepted, and it's in the wild. What do? Leave it? Put it in the backlog? Product owner would probably never, even though it's like 1 point or less, to do that. The product owner may never see business value in it. They can use it. How many of you would just fix it the next time you're in there nearby that thing? Yep, that's what usually happens. Oh, by the way, you just broke all your UI tests, all the documentation, and what's worse is the smiley guy that goes to the trade shows. It's like, and if you click this button here, oh shoot, it broke. You know, you might screw up a lot more than you think if you just make that quick fix. So the goal of all of this is just do the right thing and be professional. Thank you very much.